Will I not lie by her side when you bring me home as I command, and lie with her set apart by the way? No, my son, I will not. I loved her. I loved her too dearly. But things do not go according to feeling and the luxurious softness of the heart, but according to their importance and according to duty. It is not suitable that I lie by the way. Rather with his fathers will Jacob lie, and by Leah his first wife, from whom came the heir. Lo, now your black eyes are full of tears. That, too, I clearly see. They look so much like the eyes of the dearly beloved as to make me not believe my own. It is lovely, my son, that you are so like her, when you now, in your mercy, put your hand under my thigh in token that, according to importance and duty, you will bury me in Machpelah, the double cave. Joseph swore the oath, and when he had done so, Israel bowed himself upon the bed's head and gave thanks. Then the set-apart one sat a while in silence beside his father's couch, and the old man leaned his head on his shoulder and saved his strength for what should come. Ephraim and Manasseh. A few weeks later, he fell ill. His old cheeks were flushed with a slight fever. His breath came short, and he kept his bed, half-sitting, propped up in cushions to ease his breathing. It was not necessary for Naphtali to run and tell Joseph, for Joseph had set up a messenger service between Goshen and Mentheh, and daily or twice daily had news of the old man. Now he was told, "Your father is ill with slight fever." And he called his two sons and said in the Canaanitish tongue, "Get ready. We shall be going down into the lowlands to visit your grandfather on my side." They answered, "But we have an engagement, father and lord, to hunt gazelles in the desert." "Have you heard what I said?" he asked in Egyptian. "Or have you not?" "We rejoice greatly to make our grandfather a visit," they answered, and sent word to their friends, the rich young exquisites of Mentheh, that for family reasons they could not join in the gazelle hunt. They were exquisites themselves, products of the highest culture, manicured, curled, perfumed, and touched up, with mother-of-pearl toenails, corseted waists, and colored ribbons flowing down their aprons at front, back, and sides. They were not bad, either of them, and their dandyism was a result of the society they lived in. They cannot be blamed for it. Manasseh, the elder, was very supercilious, of course. He prided himself less on his father's renown than on his son-priest blood from his mother's side. Ephraim, on the other hand, with his Rachel eyes, we may picture as harmless, jolly, and rather modest, on the theory that a modest nature is more prone to jollity than a supercilious one. They stood behind their father in the bouncing car, steadying themselves with their bebanded arms round each other's shoulders, and drove northwards towards the Delta region. My Sakme was with them, in the hope that his physicianly skill might be of some service to the ailing one. Jacob was dozing in his cushions when Damasik Eliezer announced the approach of his son Joseph. The old man pulled himself together, had his ever-present servant lift him up in bed, and showed extraordinary presence of mind. "If we have found grace," he said, "in the eyes of his lordship, my son, that he visits us, then we must not relax on account of a slight degree of fever." And he took up his silver beard and spread it out on his chest. "The young gentlemen are with him too," said Eliezer. "Good, good, that is right," said Jacob, and sat erect, ready to receive them. Joseph presently entered with his young heirs. Manasseh and Ephraim greeted their grandfather gracefully and remained at the door while Joseph approached the bed and tenderly took the wan hands in his. "Dear and sainted father," said he, I have come with my sons because I was told you were slightly ailing. It is only slight, answered Jacob, as the illnesses of the aged are. Severe illness and high fever belong to youth and vigorous manhood. They attack with violence and dance recklessly with their victims to the grave. That would not be fitting for age. The man of full years has but a light finger laid upon him. The fever itself is weak that comes to quench his fire. But I am not yet quenched, my son. This fever is weaker than I. It has been deceived by my great years, and it is not strong enough. You will go home again from this, your second visit to my dying bed, which has not yet become my death bed. The first time I had you sent for, I begged you to come. This time you came of yourself. But yet once more will I summon you for the third and last time, and to the service for the dead. May it be far distant from my lord, yet many a jubilee. How could it, child? Enough that its hour has not yet come, the hour of gathering together. It is courtly politeness that speaks in your words. But I am nigh my day of death, to which no flowers of speech are suited, only sternness and truth. And when we come to the hour of assembly, they will be the only subject matter. I tell you so beforehand. Joseph bowed. Is it well with you, my child, before the Lord and before the gods of the land? Asked Jacob. You see, my illness is so much weaker than I, that I can permit myself to ask after another's health, at least that of those whom I love. Are you getting in your tax properly from the children of the land? It is not right, Jehoshaphat, for to the Lord alone should the fifth belong, and not to any king. But I know, I well know, my exalted one. Do you probably burn incense to the sun and the stars, as is due to your station in life? Dear father, I know, my snatched-away lamb, I know so well. And how lovely it is of you to come of your own free will between the first time and the third to see the old man, despite the demand upon you with all your affairs and your incense burning. I will avail myself of your visit to come back to a matter we have not spoken of since you appeared to me again at the plain, sore missed and found again. Then I said in your ear, my darling, that I will divide you up in Jacob, and disperse you in Israel, and split you up into the tribes of the grandsons, that the sons of the true wife may become like Leah's sons. But you shall be one of us, and rise into the rank of the fathers, in order that the words may be fulfilled, He is the exalted one. Joseph bent his head. Lo, there is a place in Canaan. Jacob began to give voice, his eyes lifted up. He was excited by the fever, and most grateful to it for the stronger pulse of his blood. A place once called Luz, where they make a wonderful blue for dyeing wool. It is no longer called Luz, but Bethel, and Esagila, the house of the lifting up of the head. For there Almighty God appeared to me in a dream when I slept in Gilgal, with my head propped on a stone. For there above on the ramp, the navel cord between heaven and earth, where the starry angels streamed up and down amid harmonies, he appeared to me in kingly guise, blessed me with the sign of life, and cried out abundance of consolation to the sound of the harps. for he promised me his mighty favor, and that he would make me to wax and increase to a great multitude and to countless children of his election. Therefore now, Jehoshaphat, shall your two sons, who were born to you in Egypt before I came to you, Ephraim and Manasseh, they shall be mine, just like Reuben and Simeon, and shall be called after my name. But those whom you will have begot later on, they shall be yours, and called after their brother's name, that they shall be like their sons. For you have been exiled from your seat in the circle of the 12, but with so much love that the fourth seat is there prepared for you next the 3 most important ones. Here Joseph got ready to present the heirs to him. But now the old man began to speak of Rachel. Once more he told how she had died and left him when he came out of Mesopotamia in the land of Canaan. It was on the way, only a little way towards Ephrath, and how he had buried her just there on the way to Ephrath, which was now called Bethlehem. All this was in passing, as it were. It had not much to do with the matter in hand. Perhaps he wanted to invoke the presence of his dear one at this hour. Perhaps his idea was to point out to the descendants of Rachel their own special shrine, since Machpelah, the double cave, was the place of pilgrimage for the rest of the brothers. It is possible that he was thinking of the little sleight-of-hand trick he had long had in mind and was trying to justify it. Our teachers disagree about his intentions in the matter, but most likely he simply had none at all, and talked about the lovely one because he was in his solemn mood and thinking of his tales. Anyhow, he simply loved to speak of her, even where there was no point at all, just as he loved to speak of God. Perhaps he talked about Rachel because he feared he might never have a chance to do it again. And now, after he had buried her for the very last time in her wayside grave, he looked about him, laid his hand over his eyes, and asked, "And who are these?" "These are my sons, dear and reverend father," answered Joseph, "the ones God gave me, as you know, here in this country." "If they are, then bring them here to me, that I may bless them." What was there to bring? The heirs came forward of themselves, bowing from the hips with exaggerated good form. The old man wagged his head and made clucking noises with his tongue. "Lovely youth, so far as I can see," said he. "Fine and charming before God, both of them. Bend down to me, treasures, that I may caress the young blood in your cheeks with my 100-year-old mouth. Is this Ephraim I am kissing, or Manasseh? No matter. If it was Manasseh before, it is Ephraim now whom I kiss on the cheeks and on the eyes. Lo, I have seen your face again," he turned to Joseph, still holding Ephraim embraced, "that I thought not to see. And not only that, but God has now showed me your seed. Is it too much to call him the source of infinite goodness?" "By no means," Joseph answered rather absently, for he was concerned that his sons should stand in the right order before Jacob, who plainly did not distinguish between them. "Manasseh," he said in an undertone to the elder, "take care. Come here and stand in your right order. Ephraim, stand there." And he took Ephraim by his right hand and pushed him towards Israel's left, and with his left he took Manasseh and put him at Israel's right, so that everything should be in order. But what, with surprise and annoyance, if with suppressed laughter at the same time, did he see? He saw this. The father, his blind face uplifted, laid his left hand upon Manasseh's bowed head, and, crossing his arms, put his right hand over upon Ephraim's. With his blind eyes staring into space, he began, before Joseph could interrupt him, to speak and to bless. He invoked the threefold God, the Father, the Good Shepherd, and the Angel, who should bless the lads, and see that his name and the names of his fathers should be named upon them, and that they should grow into a multitude, like to a multitude of fishes in number. Yea, so be it. Stream, blessing, sacred gift, out of my heart, through my hands, upon your heads, into your flesh and your blood. Amen. It was quite impossible for Joseph to interrupt the blessing, and his sons did not notice what was happening. They were rather distray, and a little out of sorts, particularly Manasseh, because this ceremony had made them miss the gazelle hunt in the desert. Each of them felt the blessing hand on his head, but even if they could have seen that the hands were crossed, and the right hand lay on the younger brother's head, the left on the elder's, they would have made nothing of it, and simply thought it had to be that way on account of the outlandish customs of their foreign grandfather. They would not have been so far wrong, for Jacob, brother of the hairy one, was, of course, repeating a pattern. He was copying his own father, the blind man in the tent, who had given him the blessing before the red one. And to his way of thinking, the blessing did not work unless there was a trick in it. There must be an exchange. Therefore he changed at least his hands, so that the right one rested on the younger's head, and he became the right one. Ephraim had Rachel's eyes, and was obviously the more agreeable of the two. That very likely influenced him. But more important still was the fact that Ephraim was the younger, as he himself, Jacob, had been, and had been exchanged through the skin and through the fell of the beast.